it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 340. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we got a lot to get to here on the podcast. Still no real big Phillies news here during the hot stove. A couple other teams making some minor moves, but none of the big fish have been caught yet. Imagine a lot of that stuff is going to pick up as the winter meetings roll around later this month. Now that we are in the month of December, stuff starts to get a little bit more serious, but in the meantime, we'll have some speculation on what the Phillies could be doing. We're going to play a little game. We've got $60 million to spend, and we're going to spread it out among a bunch of different free agents, and you can let us know whether or not you agree with our lists and our priorities. And you know, now that we're nearing the end of the decade, we're going to start finishing up this month with a couple of looks back at the decade that was with the Phillies. And to this week, we'll do our best Phillies position players of the decade. And Liz, Justin, and I will do a snake draft where we'll draft a bunch of different our favorite players or the best players, however we decide we want to do it, of the past decade of Phillies baseball. And joining me to do that, as they do every Sunday night, is, of course, Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. How's it going?
Hi, John. I'm doing great. How are you?
Hanging in there. We're going to give the fans a little bit of an Eagles breather again this week, which I think is much needed. And also joining us is Justin Clue from Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up, bud?
John, I have terrible news.
Oh, gosh.
Early word that Curt Schilling has deleted his Twitter account, has just
no.
hit the internet.
Is that news? It's been gone for a couple of months.
That's news to me. I didn't know that.
This is an irrevocable loss, frankly, to the internet, to culture at large. And frankly, I feel like it was worth a mention, so we can, just have it as part of have it on the record.
You know,
part of the global record.
I'm sorry that we didn't have some Curt Schilling tweets to talk about with family members around the Thanksgiving table this week. It just dawned on me. That's a real shame. That's a loss for the world.
Speaking of losses, I felt like it was a shame that it's just part of the general process of hiring a new manager in Philadelphia that you have to send him to other Philadelphia sporting events to just welcome him as a part of that.
I mean,
they did it with
sorry
Gabe, and you know, we all got really excited when Gabe Kapler rang the bell at the Sixers game, and of course they did it again with Joe Girardi today, sending him to the Eagles game. And I don't know if it takes a special kind of Eagles game to have that be Philadelphia at its best, and today was not Philadelphia at its best.
Well,
with
they
Joe
were in,
Girardi.
They were in Florida. They were in Miami.
Sure, but it's
like,
not...
which is great, like nice vacation for him.
Liz, if you're
going to
be fact checking me for this entire episode, the Eagles weren't in Philadelphia today. The Curt
Schilling's
Twitter account has been deleted for months. Yes, I understand. I'm far behind on all of this, but
no,
still.
I'm telling you about the Girardi thing because I'm grateful that he got a chance to be in Florida and not here for that Eagles game, because that would have been.
That would have been worse.
That would have been a lot worse. At least he got to be around a majority of happy fans, even if they weren't Eagles fans.
Yeah, but I got to say, I'm looking at this. And that's very true, although that stadium was mostly full with Eagles fans, I think. But, I mean, it certainly would have been a different vibe, and you'd been dealing with some pretty awful weather. And I'm looking at this picture of Joe Girardi at the game, man. This, boy, it's not a good look.
Stop making him do this.
I mean, yeah, let the guy ease off on the gas here just a little bit. Let's let him coast for just a little while before we absolutely drive this guy insane. He's going to be ringing the bell at the Sixers game pretty soon with, like, dressed up as whatever their bunny mascot name is. I mean, the way things are going, he's going to do some kind of tour around Philadelphia with Gritty at some point. I mean, we just got to... Let's not kill Joe Girardi before he actually manages his first game.
John, I feel like I got to step in here. Liz, I'm sure you were about to just jump in.
He already did a gritty thing, didn't he?
No, not a gritty thing. The Sixers mascot is Franklin the Dog. You are referring to Hip Hop the Bunny, who is
yes.
no longer a part of the mascot cycle in Philadelphia.
I am way behind on my NBA mascot.
We're coming. We're coming off hot from Thanksgiving break. Just searing hot.
Listen, we all ate a lot of food.
Yeah,
I ate an embarrassing amount of cheese and drank way too much, so I'm still recovering.
Yeah,
yeah, we all are. We all are. I think it's been rough, and we all have work on Monday. So, hope everybody listening enjoyed their Thanksgiving, and we're ready to get back into the hot stove. And hopefully, things are going to start to pick up this week, and we'll have some actual news to talk about here over the next few days. Before we get into some of the fun stuff that we want to get to, and this, you know, this is going to be fun to talk about too. You know, but not necessarily as fun as doing some fantasy stuff with the free agents and the snake draft. There's a big decision day coming on Monday, as you guys are listening to this, December 2nd, when teams have to decide whether they're going to tender contracts to arbitration eligible players or let them go into free agency. The Phillies have decisions on 9 players: backup catcher Andrew Knapp, pitchers Jose Alvarez, Vince Velasquez, Hector Neris, Adam Morgan, Zach Eflin, all among those players. I think we've talked about them a little bit in the past. I don't know if I talked about it with you or if I talked about it on a Hit and Season by myself. It's kind of all running together at this point. But I think, you know, there's a number of guys here I think that they'll extend contracts to. I think, and you guys agree with me, or, you know, let me know if you agree or disagree with me with these. But Andrew Knapp, do you guys think they'll offer him a contract for next year?
I mean, they've been talking him up this offseason in a way that would make it strange if they were to suddenly lose him. You know, you got to go out of your way to come up with reasons to fortify your argument to keep Andrew Knapp on the team. But hey, you know, that seems like that's the avenue that we have evidence proving that they would want him around. And that seems like that's what they would do.
Yeah. Do you agree, Liz? I mean, I don't think they should keep Andrew Knapp around, but I think
God,
they will.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. No. But they're probably going to. There's no reason for them to talk about him at all, and yet he's always why? It's like he's always being talked about for some reason. So I could see no other reason for that other than they really like him.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about, well, it's hard for a young guy to adjust to not getting any more playing time. Well, he's not going to get more playing time next year. So if he's not good at it, let's get a backup catcher who's okay with playing every once in a while instead of needing to play every day. I think you guys would agree with me that all these guys I'm about to name will be offered contracts. Jose Alvarez, Hector Neris, Adam Morgan, Zach Eflin, right? I mean, they're all definitely coming back next year.
I think so. I can't see why they wouldn't.
Vince Velasquez. I think they probably offer him a contract as well, but for a bullpen spot. And I don't think he's going to get a big, his arbitration number isn't going to be huge, probably $3 or $4 million. For that kind of money, I'm okay with Vince Velasquez sticking around and seeing if he'll work out of the bullpen. You guys?
Sure, why not?
I was just going to say the exact same words. Sure, why not? I mean,
honestly, dripping with enthusiasm.
Honestly, I think it would be more likely that Velasquez would get a deal than even some of the other guys you mentioned as a part of that list. Like they seem like, again, another guy that they like and they see some usefulness in. And we talk about, every time we've been complaining about Vince over the past couple of years, we've mentioned his usefulness and that talent's in there somewhere. I don't know. I guess they'd look at what's available out there and what they'd have to finagle contractually, and they're just like, this guy's here. The bullpen experiment seems like it should have started a while ago, and it kind of did, but then he went back to the rotation.
Their heart wasn't in it with him last year in the bullpen. I mean, it was a necessity, but you could tell their heart wasn't in it.
I can see that, and you know, maybe it's too late. Maybe it's if the change had happened a little bit ago, we would have seen a Vince Velasquez coming out of the bullpen, and we would have seen him be a more effective pitcher in small doses, but maybe that ship has sailed, but it's kind of funny listing all these names and talking about who's coming back and you know, imagining a team that's made adjustments for next year and that has gotten better for next year. But then you're like, oh no, all these guys are, it's just going to be back. It's going to be, a lot of the same stuff.
Same names you've been hearing.
Well, a couple of the guys there's two guys in particular who everybody is kind of watching to see what the Phillies do, and I think most people think they probably will not be back, are two long-tenured guys with this team, Cesar Hernandez and Michael Franco, and we've talked about them before. Cesar Hernandez, if they go through the arbitration process, MLB Trade Rumors says his salary could rise to the $11.8 million range, and then Franco, who lost the third-base job last year, played a lot of last season in AAA, could see his salary go up to $6.7 million. And Liz, we talked about Cesar Hernandez last week and with the $11.8 million range. Justin, I want to get your thoughts on this too. that's a lot of money for Cesar Hernandez. As good a player as he can be sometimes, man, paying Cesar Hernandez, a guy who's been a below league average offensive player the last couple of years, $12 million. I don't see any way they do that.
He's also not very good at second base. Yeah, like, he's fine there. He's serviceable, but you want more than that from a guy if he's just always going to be kind of league average. Because his average always has always felt like very empty to me. You know, and it what he does has never seemed terribly productive, at least in the last year.
Yeah.
It's a toss-up. I don't see them offering. I can imagine a lot of different things they can do with that money, and I'm sure they want to. But I don't have a lot of confidence that they're actually ready to make this change yet. They haven't been for the past couple of years. They've had chances to move on from him with the existence of Scott Kingery, and they still haven't done it. And so I don't know. I could see a world where we get a surprise where there's like, here, have $11 million, Cesar. Thumbs up.
Yeah, and I guess, Justin, the possibility exists that before the official decision is made, they could try to trade one of these guys. No doubt they're trying to trade him, but I think most teams realize that the Phillies will let these guys go, so why bother trading for one of these guys? I can't imagine there's a lot of desire to go out and try and acquire, like go out of your way to acquire Cesar Hernandez or Michael Franco.
Yeah, if that's the assumption, then it would be tough to make that. If you're the Phillies, it'd be tough to have any leverage in negotiations. You'd only be throwing them in with something else for some reason. But yeah, I feel like it's we're kind of at this point in getting to know the Phillies and the moves that their front office is going to make, in that they will go out of their way to talk up a guy that fans aren't crazy about, or talk up a guy whose value may not be known on the surface level, which is to say the baseball playing level. But they also will make a move that they want to make that they know will not necessarily be understood at first. They will make moves that they feel like they will hold out to get what they want. I remember there's been times where we've been complimenting the Phillies for not making a move because they didn't get the offer they wanted, and they didn't want to have to make a move. We've also wondered what the hell the Phillies were doing when they were acquiring the Santana acquisition that bumped Rhys Hoskins from first base. Kind of wondering, hey, what's this about? What's this play? And they were like, this is our plan. Trust us. This is going to work. Didn't really work, but you see how it could have worked. And then, you know, the Andrew Knapp thing we were just talking about. They value some guys. They were crazy about Freddie Galvis for the longest time. And I think Cesar is one of those guys that they do love. Cesar Hernandez, and maybe that's part of that's because he's a holdover, sort of this, you know, half generation we're at right now, where it's like, you know, there were some guys that were still playing with Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley not that too terribly long ago that are still on this team, I think. So they seem to hold on to these veteran middle infielders. They treasure them, I feels like. So you could see them being like, yeah, Cesar's been here. We like him. He's a part of this team. He's stuck with us through some lean years. He's been a solid player. At one point, we were talking about him being the best leadoff hitter in baseball. One brief point, we were talking about him being the best leadoff hitter in baseball. But yeah, it's tough to imagine that these guys have a long-standing place with this team moving forward, because their time seems to have come and gone, especially in Franco's case. I mean, I don't think we're even going to sit here and talk about what his future with the team is, because it seems unlikely that he has anything of a future with this team. So, yeah, in Cesar's case, it just seems like, he's just at that point where giving him the money that he's owed is going to be too much. Hopefully he finds a place with another team that is in need of a middle infield. I was going to say talent, but I guess it's
well,
still
talent.
Well,
he's
not a bad
player.
He's
somewhat talented,
player. It's just, you know, his flaws have become slightly bigger flaws as he's gotten a little older.
And if he was making half of what he's projected to make, it's probably a much easier decision. He's a $6, $7 million player. He's not $12 million.
It's just where you wind up with players that you like after a certain amount of time.
And he won't sign a deal like that with the Phillies, but the Phillies could sign him. You know, they don't have to sign him. They don't have to go through the arbitration process. They can work out deals with all these different guys. Mm-hmm. And the deadline for this is 8 o'clock Monday night Eastern time. So it could be that we see a lot of agreement on one-year deals with all of these different players that we're talking about here. But I mean, don't think...
Sorry, not to cut you off, but like, if you're Cesar, like, think about it from his perspective. I mean, remove all this personal stuff that we're unaware of about why he might want to stay. But like, are the Phillies a team that you necessarily are you looking to get their offer and work something out with them, or are you looking to like move on?
Could be he's looking to move on. I mean, this is the only organization he's ever known. Sometimes that's tough, but, you know, I don't think he's in the Phillies' plans. I really don't. I mean, they've got so many different options, you know, about there's a lot of talk about trading Gene Segura. Well, I didn't realize that Gene Segura, I've read this week, has a no-trade clause. So it's not as easy as just trading Gene Segura. They might have to put Gene Segura at second base, depending on what they do with shortstop and third base.
Why can't this team ever feel like it's playing the right guys at the right position?
Oh, my gosh. Well, they think that this positional flexibility. I mean, I wonder how much of all this is going to be affected by Joe Girardi being the manager now. When, you know, I think this is still Matt Klentak making a lot of these decisions, but Joe Girardi's going to have input, and I don't know that he wants all these guys playing out of position. My guess is Joe probably wants each guy to play the position he's best at.
Were you surprised to see like the few? We're at the very broad end, I think, of the offseason, where a lot of the stuff being suggested is just that, suggestions, rather than like I heard that it's just people throwing ideas out there just to kind of get the ball rolling. But even so, Gene Segura's name was coming up a lot, like you said. And were you surprised that it was him that was coming up in all these trade proposals involving the Phillies?
I think I was to a degree. I mean, I don't know how much of the narrative around hustle and all that stuff actually means anything inside the locker room. There's a reason he's been traded as much as he has. And, you know, we heard, you know, good last when he was with the Mariners that he got into a fight with D. Gordon, I think it was. So, I mean, I've just seen on Twitter, the same as you guys, you know, quote unquote whispers or that the Phillies don't want to have him back or whatever. I don't know what the guy's like inside the locker room, but maybe he's not universally loved. Maybe the attitude isn't great, and he certainly had a down year last year, both offensively and defensively. Liz, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, as far as the no trade clause, he had it before he came to Philly. He was traded to Philadelphia, so he consented to being part of that trade, ostensibly to get off the Mariners, which who could blame him? Because they're good Lord. I mean, I guess I was a little surprised to hear his name included. I have no idea about anything that's going on behind the scenes, but. I mean, if he's willing to go somewhere else, you know, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't at least explore it. You know?
I don't either. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, but I'm just thinking of now their infield. If there's a situation where they trade Segura, Hernandez and Franco are gone, that thins out the infield a great deal. It kind of necessitates a move, which, again, we're probably going to talk about later in this episode, the kind of moves they would make. I don't know. I guess what sticks out to me is that it would be a decent amount of turnover for a team that seems like they're one foothold away from the mountaintop for the past like 2 years. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, we're okay. The rebuild is over and we're there. Or like, you know, we're at least in a more competitive place. And then suddenly there's three new faces in the infield and you're like, huh, well, you know, it all comes together quickly. And, you know, it's a long season and everything. It just, yeah, it struck me.
It's sort of all their own fault. They've had numerous occasions to sort of turn over some of these guys and they haven't, they've chosen not to. So now they're at a point where they, like, seriously, for the final time, have to figure out what they're doing. They have to, like, they have to make a decision on Cesar Hernandez. They have to make a decision about Michael Franco. And now third base is a problem. Where are you putting everybody? The time for experimentation when we were so forgiving, if it wasn't over last year, it's now super duper, like, way extremely over.
Yeah,
so,
identify your best players, identify the best places they play, and then make your decisions based around that.
Exactly. You know? They've gotten themselves into this mess, and now they're just going to have to buy and trade themselves out of it because they have some guys they just can't move forward with, and they have to find some new dudes to fill their place. Baseball teams have done better with less.
One other piece of news involving the coaching staff. I don't think we ever talked about Joe Dillon officially being hired as the hitting coach. Last time we all talked about it, there was some speculation it could be Matt Stairs, but the assistant hitting coach of the world champion, and it still feels weird to say that, Washington Nationals, is going to come aboard and be the Phil's new hitting coach. We'll see how that works out. I mean, I don't have any insight on how he's going to do, or just hopefully he's able to fix Rhys Hoskins. That's obviously going to be job number one for Joe Dillon coming in here. But one of the other pieces of news came out today that Craig Driver is not a name that a lot of people know about, but he's one of the Phillies' bullpen catchers. And he's a guy who really helped JT Realmuto refine the one area of his game defensively that he hadn't been strong in before coming to Philadelphia, and that was with pitch framing. And now it looks like it's been confirmed Craig Driver is going to go be the he's going to Chicago with the Cubs to be their first base coach and catching instructor. So I guess that is a promotion for him. So the Phillies are losing one of the few coaches on the coaching staff last year, Liz, that actually did good things. And it was, this is one of the few areas where the Phillies, I think, are actually among the best in baseball at teaching their players how to do it and getting production, is getting their guys to get better at pitch framing. We saw Jorge Alfaro in 2018 improve with his pitch framing as the year went along. So I don't know how much of an impact this is going to be with Realmuto. I think it's probably one of those things where maybe he's learned the skill now that you can, you know, afford to lose a guy like Craig Driver in this kind of situation. But he definitely helped him last year.
Sure. I mean, you have to assume that they're going to look for someone who has those skills, you know, regardless, you know, maybe he's better, maybe he's not as good, but at least he'll be someone who, you know, Realmuto can bounce things off of. You know, maybe it is that he's learned the skill. I have no idea. I'm completely talking out of my butt right now. I have no clue about coaches or what the impact they really have, especially like a catching guy. Like, you would assume he does a lot, but these guys, these coaches move around a lot everywhere. I mean, they get tossed around like, I don't know, fish at a Seattle market. That got away from me.
I mean, the Phillies catching lab has been talked about for a while. It's one of the few areas that they've excelled where, you know, even though they have a reputation for lagging behind. And I think it was Matt Gelb dug into it this past, or no, spring 2018. He talked about Driver specifically is in the article. He's a former Yale baseball assistant coach. So if the Cubs want to focus more on catching, they're going to have a lot of guys to turn to. The new manager is David Ross. Mike Napoli is there. What is he, like the quality assurance coach or something? He's out there. And now they've got the Phillies, Craig Driver from one of the more vaunted catching labs in baseball. So, you know, they clearly are emphasizing catching skill, and they're going to have plenty of minds to contribute.
So it'll be interesting to see what the Phillies do. They, you know, they still also have some catching minds there too. They have Bob Stumpo, who was the bullpen coach. I think they have Dusty Wathan, who works with the catchers as well. He's going to be back, and Joe Girardi himself was a former catcher. So
that's something. You know,
yeah, I don't think that's nothing for sure. And JT Realmuto is an established veteran who, you know, probably, I think, If you can trust that somebody has learned a skill and can retain that information, then hopefully JT Realmuto is that guy. When we come back, we're gonna take a look at. There's a fun activity that I did on Twitter and that we're gonna do here. We have $60 million to spend on remaining free agents, so we're gonna construct a free agent shopping list with $60 million here, and let's see. I mean, there's a couple different philosophies that you can use to set this up. So we'll go around the horn and we'll spend $60 million on free agents up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So as we are in the hot stove, we haven't seen the Phillies do a whole lot just yet. They've got some money to burn. I don't think we're going to see the stupid money spent this offseason, but we might. And, you know, there's an interesting – I'm not exactly sure how much money the Phillies have to spend before they hit the luxury tax, because there's going to be some players, if they don't sign deals with Hernandez and Franco, and maybe they don't sign Velasquez, or I think they will, but that will, you know, reduce some money off the payroll. But then you've got to figure out if they're going to extend JT Realmuto. So it's kind of up in the air exactly how far away the Phillies are from the luxury tax. But $60 million sounds like an appropriate number when we're talking about the Phillies here as far as how much money they have to spend this offseason. It might be a little less than that. It might be $50 million. But for the sake of an online game that went around on Twitter this week, somebody created a list of tiers of free agents and wanted people to construct a team with $60 million on hand. And so there are three free agents here that would cost you $30 million. Gerrit Cole, Anthony Rendon, and Steven Strasburg. There are four free agents that would cost you $20 million. Zach Wheeler, Hyunjin Ryu, Madison Bumgarner, and Josh Donaldson. There are five players that would cost you $15 million. Dallas Keuchel, Didi Gregorius, Cole Hamels, Marcelo Ozuna, and Nicholas Castellanos. There are six players that would cost you $10 million. Atlanta starter Julio Teheran, Tanner Roark, Michael Pineda, Mike Moustakas, Will Harris from the Astros relief pitcher, and Kyle Gibson, starting pitcher, who actually is already off the board. He was signed. Who signed Kyle Gibson? Totally flew out of my head. Somebody signed Kyle Gibson this week. I can't remember who it was. And then there are a few players here listed at $5 million. Alex Wood, Drew Pomeranz, he's also been signed. He went to the Padres. Wade Miley, Maldonado, the catcher for the Astros. Daniel Hudson, relief pitcher for the Nationals. Dellin Betances, relief pitcher for the Yankees. And catcher named Castro for the Twins. I'm not really up on the catchers who are free agents because I don't really care. So we're looking at different guys that we can spend $60 million on. So Justin and Liz, have you guys kind of come up with a list of who you'd want to spend the money on?
I have.
Yes.
All right. Justin, let's start with you. How are you spending $60 million? Then we'll go to Liz, and then I'll give you my list.
Okay, how many times can I answer this question? I have four different answers.
Give us all four, and
I'm glad you're letting me ruin this exercise for everyone by taking all the answers.
Yeah, seriously. Right.
No, that's fine. I'll just do two. I did one for quantity and one for quality with $60 million. I feel like I'm always tempted to do one or the other, so I wanted to do both. And then what I have, if we circle back, I have one that I think is probably my real answer that I'd go with that covers the most ground. But, you know, obviously the Phillies have a couple of areas we've been talking about extensively. You want third base. You obviously want to hit starting pitching market reasonably hard. And then what's left over is what I kind of reserve for any sort of relief help, even though I don't prioritize relievers as much because I have given plenty of spiels on how volatile it is and how unpredictable it is to spend money to acquire relievers. Just you know, the bullpen's such a crapshoot. I don't worry about it as much. So for my quantity approach, where it was just like how many players can I get for this amount of money that I actually would except as on this team, I went with Mike Moustakas. He was at third base. I was going to say he's my most expensive player, but I forgot that I also grabbed Zach Wheeler for 20 and Cole Hamels for 15. I felt like Wheeler and Hamels addresses starting pitching. I feel like Zach Wheeler's probably going to become one of the more overvalued. The longer he's on the market, he's going to become one of the more overvalued names out there. But it calms you down, I think, to have both Zach Wheeler and Cole Hamels. I think that's disappointing. I don't think it necessarily solves the starting pitching issues the Phillies have, but it is something. It brings more talent to the rotation. And it could be the answer. Then Mike Moustakas at third base. And then I have a remaining $15 million I'm spending on pitching in Daniel Hudson, Dellin Betances, and Wood? Is it Alex Wood that's on them?
Okay. I think it's Alex Wood that's on them.
And Alex Wood. So, you know, acquiring six players for $60 million is okay. And, like, those aren't the worst players in the world, but this team needs a third baseman. That's not going to be Michael Franco. And Moustakas isn't my favorite, obviously, but he can do the job, and I feel like I addressed most things. I really like Daniel Hudson, actually. I know I just gave a whole speech about relievers, but acquiring Hudson for $5 million seemed like a real steal for me. And then for quality, I just grabbed three guys. I'm with Rendon at third base for $30 million. I went with Wheeler again for 20 and then grabbed Julio Teheran for 10. Of those three guys, Tanner Roark, Michael Pineda, and Teheran, I just looked at his numbers and I felt like he had the most promising and scalding year on the mound. I know he struggled at times, but I mean, that's all three of these guys did. That's why they're on that tier. So I went with him just after giving a peek at what was available. So those are my two outlines as far as spending that $60 million.
I have a feeling that, you know, it's interesting. I love Teheran. I didn't really think about him a whole lot. I didn't give him a whole lot of consideration, but Wheeler to the Phillies just feels like it's almost inevitable. It really does feel kind of that way, even in real life. But to me, the Moustakas for $10 million is an absolute steal there. Before I get to mine, Liz, what did you come up with?
I just picked the best players that I could find for $60 million that fit some of what the Phillies needed. I picked Gerrit Cole at $30 million because the Phillies need him. The Phillies, I could have taken Steven Strasburg. Honestly, I don't actually care that much. I don't, there are differences between the two, but they need one of them. So they should sign one of them, whichever one it is. Personally, I don't care that much. Then I have Cole Hamels because they need someone in the back of the rotation, and also I love him. Then I've got Mike Moustakas and Daniel Hudson. I think those are the best players that you can get for the money and that fit what the Phillies need.
That's one of my other four. That's exactly those four guys. Yep. Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a really good list. I like that very much because you do get quite – and that's probably – that might actually even be among the more realistic because the Phillies aren't going to sign six free agents. You know, this is kind of a fun game we're doing, but I have, they're most likely not going to sign that many. Four is probably a lot, but you do solve a lot of your problems there. You know, I don't think they're going to go and buy three relievers or anything this offseason. I feel like Moustakas is also a really good choice here. Let me give you mine. I like Justin did too. I did a budget buster, like a big one, and then I did one where I spread the money around a little bit. And mine's almost your first one, Justin, almost mirrors mine exactly. I had Wheeler at 20 million. I had Gregorius. I put Gregorius on the team at $15 million and Moustakas at 10. So I added two offensive pieces there. So I got Moustakas at third base. I got Gregorius at shortstop. I got Wheeler as my top acquisition for the rotation. My other starting pitcher, I went with Wade Miley at $5. He was phenomenal last year until September.
That's a good get too for what he's available for.
So I thought that was a good value, his September dragging his value down. I thought he was very good for most of the season. And then I went and got Betances and Hudson also for $5. So I got two relievers, I got two starters, and I got what I think are two impact players for the offense. I also put out, I did this on Twitter, and I put out a second one where I went with Cole at $30 million, Hamels at 15, Moustakas at 10, and Hudson at 5. Liz, I had your exact
So we all
list.
Three did that. All right.
We all basically did that.
Now we know what the Phillies should do. There we go.
And I put out a vote on Twitter. I basically asked, what of the options above do you prefer? Option A, where we spread the money out, or option B, where you get Cole and Hamels and Moustakas? And 70% out of 340 votes picked option B, where basically I think people just want to go after Gerrit Cole at $30 million. And, you know, it's funny. I think, you know, as we look back on the history of signing free agent pitchers, I think there have been, four pitchers that have signed $200 million deals, and they've all worked out for the most part. It was Zach Greinke. You've got David Price. You've got Max Scherzer. And who's the third? Kershaw. Kershaw is the fourth one. So those are the four guys who've signed $200 million free agent deals. So far, I mean, David Price, you know, I'm not in love with David Price, but he did help you win a World Series, you know, when you signed him to that free agent deal. Greinke's been very good. Scherzer's obviously been one of the best free agent signings in baseball history with what he's given the Nationals. And Kershaw, depending on, you know, when he signed that contract, that the Dodgers are definitely getting him on the downslope of his career, but he's still effective. So, you know, I think if you're, you know, going after Gerrit Cole or Steven Strasburg, I'm not as worried about signing one of those guys to a $200+ million contract because most of the times you get what you pay for with pitchers.
Yeah, for all the talk of not teams having strict approaches as far as what they're willing to offer pitchers, the track records you just laid out, you know, they haven't been without hiccups or health scares, but I think those teams would probably make those deals again. Like, that's just based on the names you mentioned. And the thing with Cole and Strasburg, I mean, Liz, yeah, it's kind of a toss-up. We just got such long looks at those two guys, and, like, neither one of them blinked throughout the course of the World Series. It's, like, way too appealing of an idea to just throw all your money at a Gerrit Cole. Hopefully not all your money, but, like, a significant amount of money. I think we all gravitate towards Cole for the obvious reason that the Phillies have a deep starting pitching need. They have a need for a stopper at the top of the rotation. And I think after you get Cole, they will, like, you will want them to get someone else, but it also eliminates the specificity of who it is after Gerrit Cole. Any one of these guys is going to be like, we got Gerrit Cole. I'm like, okay, we also signed Cole Hamels. we got Garrett Cole. This is great. Like, that's, yeah, they did more than just sign Garrett Cole. The appeal of Hamels is also exactly what you're saying, that it will thrill people because, oh, it's nostalgic and it's great. And he's still, yeah, he's still effective. So this is cool. But I wanted to throw my fourth one out there just so you guys try this for,
oh, yeah,
this one on for
size. Oh, I'm excited now.
Okay.
This was just kind of dumb. I felt like,
yes.
It felt like more, I'm like not addressing the relief pitching at all and more addressing the other need we talked about. Like, we were basically looking at this like, okay, we need third base, we need starting pitching, we need bullpen arms. But in this one, I was like, you know what? They could also, we keep saying Andrew Knapp, whatever. They could also use a catcher. So I went with Zach Wheeler, was the most expensive pitcher. Threw Dallas Keuchel in there. Not sure how we felt about him, but none of us said his name. But I also, you know, he had a positive impact on his team going down the stretch. And then at third base, I stuck Josh Donaldson for $20 million and then grabbed Maldonado from Houston at $5 million. You know, because the thing about backup catcher is it doesn't have to be someone who's that great, but there's really low bar in Philadelphia for performance from a backup catcher. And I feel like, you know, we got a nice long look at Maldonado as well, even if he doesn't play all the time, just with how deep we watched the Astros go into the playoffs. So, you know, if he's going to acquiring him to fill that role, I think would make it better, just if only because it's not that hard to make that position better right now in Philadelphia. So that was just some alternative names I felt like could make it work. But honestly, I feel like we have a winner in Cole, Hamels, Moustakas, and Hudson.
Yeah, I think those three are a part of our plans, no matter, you know, where we're going here. But I guess, you know, the question is, which approach do you guys prefer? And I think, Liz, your one list where you're going after Garrett Cole, you prefer going after, like, the big money pitcher, the big fish pitcher, and then maybe just having enough money to spread around on two or three other players as opposed to sprinkling money around five or six other players. Is that accurate?
I think so. When you have a need as strong and as obvious as the Phillies do, I mean, a pitcher is expensive for a reason. And we got a long look at both, you know, Cole and Strasburg. And we know who they are and what they can do. We've watched Steven Strasburg throughout his entire career pitching against him, you know, playing as his team 19 times a year. So, yeah, they have to go for it. Like, you can find value at the margins, but you're not going to fix your problem signing Zach Wheeler unless he suddenly turns into a different pitcher. They have to go after, like, the guys that they need are out there. They just have to go get them.
And Justin, I think that's the scariest part because I like the idea of spreading the money around. I think we saw the Phillies go after big fish last year. They got Bryce Harper, and Bryce Harper actually by the end of the season had a pretty good year for this team, and it still really didn't help them as much. They had so many holes to fill, and a lot of those holes, obviously they went and got a guy like David Robertson who they thought was going to be healthy and help out, and that didn't work out. Andrew McCutchen, the same thing. So to me, it feels like if you spread your money around, you mitigate the possibility of a couple of key injuries killing you. But at the same time, man, it makes me super nervous to think of the big offseason pitching acquisition being Zach Wheeler, just for the reason Liz said. People think there might be a breakout coming, but I mean, he had a good season last year. He's been good the last couple years, but not great, not top of the rotation great.
I'm sorry, that's Wheeler you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about Zach Wheeler, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I was literally just thinking the same thing looking at his numbers. You know, he's not a league leader in anything, but to an extent, you know what you're going to get from him, even just from the last 2 years. And if you're not going to rely on that, then why are you acquiring anybody? Like, you got to find yourself in that predicament if you're worrying about injuries or how much one guy is going to be able to impact a team, or how, if anything happens to that guy. I mean, if anything happens to a couple of these guys, the Phillies are in trouble. The Phillies already have some players that if they get injured, you know, a lot of this goes to S. So, like, you shouldn't really be applying that to Garrett Cole just because the money he'd be receiving is new money. I feel like this team has such a Garrett Cole hole at the top that, like, he specifically would fill, or, you know, Steven Strasburg again. But in Cole's case, I would say, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's got a pretty decent injury history. Like, he's pitched in plenty of games since, I'd say, even just 2017. Whereas Strasburg, you know, he may have had a couple of hiccups, I think, earlier in his career. So, you know, if that's what you need to flip the coin, then cool. But if you're going to worry about that, yes, it's a concern. But it's not like the talent you're getting from a bunch of guys that you got cute about, that you pussyfooted around and grabbed, Zach Wheeler and Alex Wood or whatever, and thought like, aha, we'll get some, you know, sneaky good talent from the margin, whatever. And then, like, they suck, but they're healthy. Meanwhile, Garrett Cole's tearing it up with another team, and everyone's like, yeah, but if he gets hurt, you know, he's not going to be good anymore. Yeah, but he's not hurt right now because sometimes guys don't get hurt. So
you heard it here first. Fill the coal hole.
Sometimes guys don't get hurt. Well, I mean, part of what could mitigate this whole decision-making is the fact that, I don't know if you guys heard, but Jake Arrieta is going to come back strong this year.
Mm. I'm sorry, who?
I don't know if you – Megan Montemuro wrote about Jake Arrieta and his injury-shortened season. He said to her, quote, being able to come into spring training this year with the ability to spin the ball with extension, be pain-free, and not have to worry about it again is going to be nice.
Sweet. Is he coming with a slingshot? Let's see it. Let's see it, guys.
And I'm sorry, which, this is the year which injury shortened season was he talking about? Which of the Phillies' injury shortened seasons? Because he's had and they both sucked.
Somebody sent me something on Twitter. Last year in spring training, apparently, there was this interaction that he had with Larry Boa. Boa said to him, hey, man, you threw real good. Arrieta turned toward Boa and thanked him as he put on his sunglasses. I'm back,
oh, geez.
He said.
Sweet.
I was going to say, this sounds like the typical best shape of his life. I'm so excited.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, he just like, I'm so excited to be pain-free and to go out and do what I know I can do, which is exactly what I said a year ago when I was excited about coming back and being pain-free and doing exactly what I know I could do before I got injured again.
Here we are. We're all in this situation. You got to pitch and we got to watch you. You know, let's see something else, but probably we won't because you're probably going to get hurt again. So blah, blah, blah.
One of these days, it's all going to come together for me. It's never my fault. You know, I just can't. It's, oh my gosh, this guy is, I'm just so done with Jake Arrieta. I apologize to the Hit and Season listeners for stumping for Jake Arrieta to the degree I did.
No,
in 2017.
Let's not stop this.
This is exactly what I'm talking
stop
about.
Stop doing
like,
this.
There's a version of this where Jake Arrieta doesn't get hurt and is good. We grabbed him because he was just sitting there, and we knew the Phillies had the money. And they were going into spring training. I was like, the Phillies could use some starting pitching. There's Jake Arrieta. Let's get him on the team. And it was the right move. It was a good move. It was like, yeah, let's get better. Let's get better. I think acquiring Arrieta was a low key moment where we were like, yeah, to quote Jake Arrieta, the Phillies are back. Like to an extent. It's like, look, they're acquiring good players.
They're willing
like
to spend
known
money.
Players. Yeah. Yeah. And this he made the rotation better on paper. And and it's the same conversation we're having about Garrett Cole right now. The Phillies signed Garrett Cole and then gets sucked into a jet engine. You know, it's like, whoops.
Can't help that. Maybe one of these springs, it's finally going to come together for Garrett. All right, so I think we're all decided that the best course of action is for the Phillies to go after Garrett Cole or Steven Strasburg and then kind of figure everything else out.
Yeah, if the Phillies do it, you know who they listen to. It was us.
That's right. That's
three
right.
Schmoes from a podcast.
I know they listen to the podcast. All right, when we come back, we're going to remember the 2010s here on the podcast these next few weeks. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a snake draft of our favorite, the best Phillies position players of the decade. We'll do that next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So we're going to do our best Phillies position players of the decade draft as we look back on the best Phillies players of the 2010s. And I wrote a piece for The Good Fight this week, and I talked about it on the last podcast, so I probably don't need to mention it again. But I look back at the best Phillies moment from each year of this past decade. And, oh boy, there were a couple years where it was tough to find a good one. What we're going to do here is the Phillies have had a lot of players play for their baseball team here over the last decade, and we're going to run down who our favorites are, who the best players were of the last decade, and we're going to go round by round. We're going to do four rounds, so 12 players in all. And one thing I forgot to do was figure out the draft order before we got all this started. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to write our names down, John, Liz, and Justin. Unless you guys have a better idea for how to do this.
Oh, no, there are no, no, this
no,
is...
No, there's no good idea.
Yeah, this is, yeah, please.
I'm folding them all up into little squares so no one can see. This is the beauty
this is
of
good.
Podcasting.
I would've, yeah.
This is good content.
Preventing us from being able to see is probably the key part of that.
Yeah, so you guys can't see what I'm doing here. So.
He could be tilting it toward himself, and we'd never know.
I could be.
The thing about John is that we know that he is definitely doing all of these things,
yes.
Whereas I would have been just like, I'm pulling it out of a hat. No. Here I go.
Actually,
oh, let me go find a hat.
I'd be crinkling paper like, look at me go, making noises.
I've got a candy dish. I've got a candy dish right here. So they're going.
Authenticity is what you want in your fantasy podcast drafts.
This is a good time to mention we are the number one SB Nation baseball podcast for the past, what? 2 weeks?
Yeah, I don't think we got numbers for last week, but this is the content you all crave, so you're welcome.
This is what they want. All right, Liz is going first here. Liz gets the number one pick in the draft. So Liz is obviously going to take Chase Utley.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I wish I had a more creative answer, but...
No.
I am crossing him off my list.
Good. I mean,
Justin is number two.
I had several alternatives.
And who's going third, John?
I'm going to go wake Ethan up, and he's going to come down and draft for me. Liz, Justin, and then me to start things off here. So, Liz, who are you taking with the number one pick in the draft?
I mean, I'm taking Chase Utley. There's a defendable position for pretty much everyone. I think any of the people that we would choose for our top three, our top four, or even six, that you could take that person first, but... You know, I'm going to take Chase Utley because I'm first and I want to.
I think you take Chase Utley because you don't have to make an argument when you pick him. But
I could make an argument for anyone.
I'm just saying you don't have to with Chase Utley. You just say, like, I'm taking Chase Utley one. It's like,
Utley.
Obviously.
Okay, cool.
Like we assumed. But how many other people do you think are non-defensible, by which I mean you don't have to defend your pick as far as number one in the past decade? I'm thinking one and maybe two.
Yeah, same.
Others.
Yeah, I'm thinking one. I think it's Chase. I can't think of another necessarily from this decade because we're not talking about pitchers. We're just talking about position players here. So,
I forgot about that. So never mind. Forget what I said. That I also am going to cross a couple of players off my list.
Cross a couple guys
there
off your list.
Go.
No, I have Cole Hamels written and then crossed out from when I was doing it earlier. Like, nope, that's wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. We're gonna do position players here. All
right, never mind.
So Chase is the only one I could think of that was a slam dunk that you could make number one. All right, Justin, your first pick.
I will pick Jimmy. I'll say Jimmy.
That's the other one I think that could have been a defensible number one pick. It's Jimmy.
I
think so.
I have an obvious pick that I wanted to make, but for some reason I feel like we're doing this like we're actually building teams that will compete against each other.
Not.
And went with the best possible. But I mean, I also, you know, obviously I love Jimmy. So I think it's a solid way to start.
All right. I'm going to go with my first pick. I know this is going to sound really stupid, but I'm going to go Bryce Harper.
No.
That's not bad.
He was high up on my list.
Mm-hmm.
He's Bryce Harper. Who cares if he's just played 1 year?
I mean, we're also looking for players who weren't, like, from the last half of the golden era at the beginning of the decade.
Right.
Because then there's that big desert where it's like,
there's no one to choose.
Who are the guys who aren't those guys who are in those times? And it's no one. It's really no one.
That's really no one.
He wasn't even,
one.
Like, a good player, like, in the only good player in the back half at the very end of his career that played for the Phillies in that time that could be considered good was Jim Thome, and you can't have him on this list because he was not a great position player.
I think Juan Pierre was like fifth in WAR that 1 year he was on the Phillies.
Yeah, that was bad. Oh my gosh. Well, Juan Pierre. Good
and
night.
His old-timey baseball pantaloons, remember?
I'm sorry, he was sixth. He was sixth in WAR that year.
Bragged about that at the post the end of year press conference they did.
Oh my gosh. All right.
Why are we doing this?
I don't know.
I don't know. This is because I knew it would be fun once we got to rounds 3 and 4.
Yes, I agree.
That's when it's going to be the most fun. So here's a crazy one. I'm going to go with Carlos Ruiz with my second round pick because outside of Utley and Jimmy Rollins, he had the third most wins above replacement of any Phillies position player in this past decade.
That's a great pick.
Plus I love Chooch.
Yes. I'll that's great news because I'm going to go Shane Victorino.
I knew you would. I knew it.
Shane Victorino's your guy.
I feel like Shane, what was the stat I just saw? He's like, he's pretty high up on the war chart, maybe from the past decade or so. He was like,
he was up there.
He was like fifth or sixth. It was postseason war, I think, because above him was Chase Utley, Tug McGraw, Steve Carlton, and one other person, and then it was him. I think that's what it was, postseason war. But in any case, I was going to pick him anyway, so let's all move on.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, Liz, you're
all right,
up next.
I'm grabbing JT Realmuto.
Damn, that was mine.
JT is a good one.
I have
one.
To. He's JT's the he was one. The best in something out of all of yep. that of the league's things. That hasn't happened on the Phillies for a long time.
That's fair, yes.
Yep, JT Realmuto. All right, third round.
Me again. Yes, that's how this works.
You again, yes. Snake, yes.
I'm picking Jason Wirth.
Okay.
Oh, man.
That's one season of Jason Wirth in this decade.
I don't care. Suck it.
That's depressing.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying.
I'm building my roster wrong. Out of players at the very ends.
Oh, my gosh. It really does get ugly. It really, really, really,
yeah,
really,
I don't know.
Really,
I,
really
I don't know where I'm going
ugly.
After this.
Because I'm going to read you some numbers here when we're all done this, and you're just going to laugh and laugh and laugh. All right, Justin, your third round pick.
I'll take Ryan in the third.
Yeah.
He was an all-star in 2010, and he got MVP votes in 2011 as well. So these were both still productive
years. I can't believe that happened.
He was still Ryan Howard. And then he led the league in strikeouts in 2014. And then I think he just kind of wandered off and lived in the subway tunnels of the Broad Street Line, feasting on the giant rats that live down there.
He still wow. lives in the bowels of the stadium, occasionally coming out like the Phantom of the Opera.
Honestly, if anybody was going to do that, there are way better Phillies to pick to have their ultimate fates be that. Ryan Howard is like one of the most wonderful
I know.
People
he's so great.
To ever
I know,
play right? for the Phillies.
Right.
He's a children's book author. He's oh my God, he's amazing.
All right. For my next pick, golly, it gets ugly. And by the way, my stat about Carlos Ruiz. Had the second most wins above replacement, 17.1 wins above replacement, trailing only Chase Utley, who had 19.6 in the decade of the 2010s. I just thought that was a phenomenal stat. I think I had that as my stat of the week a few weeks ago. All right, for my third pick, I'm going to go with... Oh, boy. It really gets hard here. Give me Placido Polanco.
Okay.
It's a you can have him. Go for it.
I will
it.
Give him yeah. to you. Yes.
It's a horrible selection. I know.
Enjoy.
That it is. And then to finish things off, give me Rhys Hoskins.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was leaning as well. So you kind of have to dive into these tinier little pockets of success to mine your last pick here. And I mean, Hoskins is a great one. And look, I mean, let's just say it. We're all kind of avoiding Odubel Herrera because he would have been
a
great pick for this.
He would have been a great pick.
One of those few guys in the middle. But yeah, obviously nobody wants to talk about him. So I will also skip over him. And I'm kind of between two guys. I'll go with Freddie Galvis.
Damn.
Freddie. if only to hurt Liz on a personal level, I will take Freddie Galvis. Something to be said for magic defense. And, you know, let's be honest. I'm sure, you know, those numbers decayed over the years as well. But he was one of those Phillies players that I love who fill that role of guy who was here forever and never on a team that was good.
I'll love him till I die. was never on or related to a Phillies team that played over 500.
Sure. So check out this Freddie Galvis stat, all
Must
right?
Wait.
Freddie Galvis in the 2010s.
I'd prefer not to, but please continue.
No, this is a good Freddie Galvis stat. This is a good Freddie Galvis stat. Freddie Galvis finished with the seventh most home runs of any Phillies player in the past decade.
God.
Nice. Yeah, remember that one season?
He 52 finished, home runs
he was one of four guys on the 2016 Phillies to finish with at least 20 home runs.
He had more home runs this decade than Cesar Hernandez. He had more home runs than Shane Victorino, Aaron Altair, Hunter Pence. He actually, the guy who's eighth on the list is John Mayberry. with 48.
Woof.
So,
woof, guys.
But here's the guy, Justin. Well, let you give me your last pick, and then I got some other stats to read here. This is just a phenomenal list.
My
of
last
players.
Pick is Hunter Pence.
I was gonna say, did we leave off Hunter Pence?
No, Hunter Pence is my pick. I'm grabbing.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Were you gonna say that before John just said his name?
Yes, I was. I had him written down already.
Because I totally forgot about
that. No, and here's the thing. He was, for the calendar year, from the, you know, July to July that he was with the Phillies, he was great.
He was really good when he was here for that year.
Yeah, he came here, and that was a very exciting time to be a Phillies acquisition, especially since they were just mining the Astros, who were always last place at that point, and guys were jumping from last to first place in the middle of the season. Here's a name we left off. Ben Revere.
No, we did not leave
I thought
him
about
off.
Ben Revere.
Sorry.
I was happy to leave Ben Revere off. Although I was at the game in Washington when he hit his second career home run. It was very exciting. It helped the Nationals blow a ninth inning lead. That was a phenomenal moment.
And I will have you MFers know that Ben Revere was a league leader in hits in 2014 with 184 hits for the Phillies. So,
do you think if we did a fifth round, could we even come up with three viable players?
I'm just wondering that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the names and like, look at the guys we left off: Pete Orr, Ross Glode, Dane Sardina. Well, remember that guy? You shouldn't.
I remember.
Let me ask you this:
passed out drunk at a bar. Go ahead, John.
Sorry. Let me ask you this: who led the team in home runs in the last decade? And it's not even close, by the way.
Somebody who's still on the team, or no?
Somebody who's technically still on the
technically.
Team.
Was it Franco?
It was Franco.
Oh, you're
Dang.
Right.
102 home runs. The next closest is Rhys Hoskins with 81. So, I mean, he's got 21 more home runs than anybody else this decade.
Guys, what are we going to find out was wrong with Michael Franco all this time? Why don't we have an MVP candidate third baseman every year right now at third base named Michael Franco? Like, what?
This
what
top
happened?
10, this top 10 list of home runs is astonishing. Franco at 102, Hoskins 81, Chase Utley 72, Jimmy Rollins 70, Odubel Herrera with 60. Okay, those are your top five. That's not crazy.
Is Tommy Joseph in there?
He is.
No, thank
not.
God.
He's pretty far down the list there.
So continue to wonder what I've done with the last decade of my life.
Well, maybe I need to. You know what, though? Maybe I need to. I have no minimum. Okay, I was worried that I had the minimum set. Number six is Dominic Brown. Dom Brown hit 54 home runs in his parts of five seasons with the team, with 54 homers. Freddie Galvis had 52. He was seventh. John Mayberry had 48 home runs. He was eighth. Carlos Ruiz and Cesar Hernandez both hit 46. They were tied for ninth. Man, this is just an ugly list of players here from this last decade
I'm
of Phillies
still
baseball.
Convinced we are forgetting someone significant. Mm-mm. I'm utterly convinced, but it was
Marlon
just,
Byrd.
Yeah. You know, Marlon Byrd. Sure. That's another
Cameron Rupp.
Delman Young. Yeah. You know, these guys who maybe were going to maybe be sort of anything and they just
Ben Francisco.
Oh, man, the Ben Francisco at least had his moment, but, you know, it didn't really matter in the end. But all right, well, that was a fun
what an upbeat way to end the episode.
Maybe next week we'll do pitchers. We can do a snake draft of the best pitchers.
Vance Worley.
Over the last decade.
What?
Vance Worley.
He's staring at his
you got him.
Spectacled face on the baseball reference pages, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
He's
wearing
yours.
A Mets uniform in his picture.
Oh, I thought that might have been a Cubs uniform, but he was never with the Cubs, I guess.
It doesn't matter. That's
bummer.
The thing about Vance Worley.
That's more than anyone has talked or thought about him in professional baseball for quite a few years.
Exactly. All right. Any final thoughts, Liz, before we wrap up?
No, I hope everyone had a wonderful, happy, safe Thanksgiving. And you have my permission to not watch the Eagles again this year.
Oh, good Lord.
I didn't mean to bring him up again, but it was a defining moment of my day, screaming at the television after I'd vowed, I'm done with them. Oh, 2 minutes later, I was not.
Just come back to the Phillies, Eagles fans. I mean, As ugly as the Philly season was, the Eagles season is actually uglier, which is impossible to believe. Justin, any final thoughts, my friend?
I have two things. One is if the Phillies want to continue their process of signing former Pittsburgh Pirates who are best friends in the form of signing Josh Harrison, who Andrew McCutchen was very excited to see join the Phillies fold. If they want to continue that, I think there's a pitcher on the market who used to play for the Pirates that could also fit into that circle of friends. And if we become Pirates I'd be happy with that, given the state of things. The second thing I want to say is, seriously, Ben Revere led the National League in hits in 2014 with Denard Span with 184 hits. They were tied for seventh in all of baseball overall. But seriously, 2014, he had all of
that's pretty good.
All, the most hits in the NL.
That's some Doug Glanville stuff right there, man.
I'm not bragging. I'm actually flummoxed by this.
It is hard to believe.
He was a weird player. It was a weird career.
He was.
Yeah, we always thought his defense was going to be better, too. But, I mean, it just was. He was a weird player, man. I mean, it's just a weird player. But that's amazing that he actually led the league in hits. And 184 hits sounds light, too.
It is.
Usually a league leader has over 200.
Oh, Jose Altuve was the leader in baseball that year. He had 225, so, yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah, interesting. All right, well, that'll just about wrap things up here for episode number 340 of Hittin' Season. Just a reminder, everybody, to tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. Have them subscribe and leave a rating and a review on iTunes, or if they get us on Stitcher or Spotify, wherever it is they get their podcast.
This podcast has a man banging on a candy dish and then a lot of shouting.
That's going to be among the things you're going to want to tell your friends about when you tell them about the Good Fight podcast feed. Also, check out our Hittin' Season Patreon. We got some bonus content up there for you as well. Justin did a great podcast with Chris Jones the other day, so you're going to want to check that out. We've got some written content, and I'll have some more video stuff going up there as well. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.